Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we'll be featuring singer, songwriter, guitarist, and frontman for the Steepwater Band, Jeff Massey. Let's roll! Jeff Massey, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Tell me about Steepwater's brand new record.
Well, we released it last April. It's called Shake Your Faith. We worked with a producer named Jim Weirt, and we did it in Cleveland, Ohio, at a studio called Crush Tone Studios. And, you know, it was recorded. The songs were a lot of last-minute ideas. A lot of them were finished up in the studio. The band set up at the control room for the most part, except the drums, and played like we were at a gig, blasting the music back through the speakers, and just set up and played.
So kind of old school recording. It's live.
It's live. I mean, there's some ear candy we added. Jim, who produced it, is a fantastic musician. That if we needed a piano part, or an extra organ part or something here, he could throw it right on there, and it just fit right into our sound. It worked out great.
How did you come about working with Jim as a producer?
Well, we were, for that particular record, we were on a label out of Cleveland that Jim was affiliated with. But, you know, long story short, we ended up buying the record and putting it out ourselves. But we met Jim through this record label and just ended up putting it out independently. But it was through that connection that we met Jim, so.
And how important is it to have a producer like that?
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're in the frame of mind where you're willing to work with a producer and you find the right guy, I think it can be a great thing because it gets you outside of your bubble. You know, if it's just the four of us, we could probably produce a good record. But when you have that other element, he's going to have ideas that you might not think of. And it's good to have somebody to tell you, you know, hey, that wasn't so good. Try that again.
For sure. Yeah, I hear you. Because sometimes you think, oh, that was a great take. And they're like, well, how about one more time?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Can you talk about some of the songs on the record?
Yeah. I like this record because we weren't doing any of the songs live. It was written pretty spontaneously. We're on past records, at least half the record would be songs we had been doing for a while.
Right.
But I think we work well under pressure, so when we knew we were going to be making a record, we got together and rehearsed, which we don't do too often. And
right.
And some of my favorite ones came across really last minute. Like there's a song called Bring On the Love that we had the music for, and I was struggling with a vocal and a melody, and it didn't seem like something that was usually my style. And when it came down to it, it was the last song we had to do, and I had to come up with something, and I did. And now it's one of my favorite tracks on the record.
Far from the
So there was definitely some spontaneity in the studio.
Absolutely, yeah. There was stuff that was left unfinished lyrically, arrangement-wise. Then there's other songs like "Ain't Got Love" and "Mama Got to Ramble," and which I would call more like our usual Steepwater sound.
So. There's a video for "Shake Your Faith," right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Is that the hit single from the record?
I suppose if there was, yeah, that was the first song we released as a and put a video out. So I you could call that the single. That was the first one we put out there, and that's another interesting song too, because that was a rock and roll tune, almost like a Rolling Stones groove, and then we kind of decided to Neil Young it out,
cool,
and make it a little sludgier, because
right.
It just wasn't clicking, and we just sometimes we'll do that, we'll just try a whole different feel, and then and you're like, oh, that's what that song's supposed to sound like. So,
and what shakes your faith?
Oh well. All the bad things around you can shake your faith if you let it, and that's kind of what lyrically it's about.
Okay,
keeping some kind of purpose in life and keeping a positive, spin on things no matter what's going on around you. That's kind of the lyrical idea behind it.
The
What was it like recording in Cleveland? I mean, some people call that the home of rock and roll because the Hall of Fame is there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Hall of Fame is right down the street. It was a cool vibe. When we were there, it was freezing. So I don't know if that affected the vibe of the record, but it was like below zero out night, you know, outside every night. But I like Cleveland. I like the vibe of it, but then again, you're in a studio 10, 12 hours a day, so you forget what's outside.
You could be
in
Miami.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that the environment probably does have a lot to do with it.
Sure.
I mean, if you're in LA and you're relaxed and it's warm, it's going to be different than if you rush from your car into the studio and you got to let your fingers warm up before you.
Exactly. You know. Yeah. And we've been in those situations. We did a record in California where it's exactly what you just said, where we had the windows open, it was 70 degrees, and it was more of a laid back thing. And not that there was added pressure this time, but it's Cleveland's way different than California. Wherever you're at is going to affect what you're doing, I suppose, or your frame of mind. But
and what record was that?
We did a record in 2008 called Grace and Melody, and a guy named Mark Ford produced it.
Sure.
He was a Black Crowes lead guitar player, and We had met him in Spain at a festival and struck up a friendship, and he was producing records at the time, and we went to Long Beach and did that record with him. And that was before Eric was in the band. We were still a trio, and that was a great experience. Mark played a lot of guitar on it, and that was another situation where a lot of the songs were unfinished, and he actually helped us finish a few, and it was a positive thing. We learned a lot from those sessions.
So as a producer, Mark brought some of his music ability and help you finish songs, so some of the songwriting ability is
yeah,
well.
Because I mean, we had a few songs that were done, and there was some that I was, when we were getting towards the end, that I knew were not complete, and he'd be like, I don't really hear the song there, try this, and totally flip it upside down and do something you didn't expect at all. So as far as working with a producer that's involved, Mark was heavily involved, whereas other producers are just trying to get good takes out of you.
Yeah.
Mark was really involved with arrangements and sound. And so each experience is different.
Sure.
You know?
Well, it's good because you want, I think, each record to have a different sound, a different voice, a different message.
Absolutely, yeah.
You mentioned Eric. So you guys were a trio for many years,
mm-hmm.
and brought on Eric Sales?
Sailors.
Sailors, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How did that change your approach and your guitar playing and your approach to the music?
Well, I think it expanded the sound, obviously, and it made things easier for me, but challenging at the same time in a good way, because we've got this other great musician, great guitar player, and now I can play some rhythm guitar, you know, and then Eric can add some vocal harmonies. He just opened up our possibilities, and so now I think the live show's better. I mean, the trio thing is cool,
sure,
but I think we had kind of, when we heard the band with Eric, the possibilities just opened, you know, so much wider. And then all our older records, a lot of those songs I would record two and three guitars on, and now we got to hear that
live.
Live, right? And
it's excellent.
Yeah, so, and Eric's been in the band 5 years now, so time is moving.
Sure. And, well, can you talk about the Yellow Fellas too?
Yeah, we still got, you know, the other founding members would be Joe Winters on drums and Todd Bowers on the bass.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have two earlier records where we were a four-piece.
Sure, you had a harp player, right?
And he sang, Mike Connolly, but he left the band, I want to say 2004, so we had that another long stretch of being a trio before Eric was back in the band.
Yeah.
So, follow that?
So, well, going back to the beginning, the band started in 98?
I want to say 90. Yeah, we put our first EP out in 98, going back home, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember hearing stories where you guys all lived together in the same house.
After the band had been playing a couple of years, we decided to get a band house in St. John, and we were there for 5 years.
Yeah.
And we rehearsed in the basement. Everybody had their own room. And it was a good thing. I think it made us a really great band. I couldn't do that forever. None of us could, you know. But I'm glad we did it.
You're still friends after all that?
Yeah, and we do 160 shows a year. I mean, and we're traveling together all the time.
Sure.
So we must like each other enough.
And that experience probably brought you guys together, eat, drink, live the music.
Yeah.
And,
It was something I'd always dreamed of doing, and I'm glad we did it, you know? And, it's not easy to do, you know? It's, you have to find somebody that's going to rent you a house first off. And
right.
Yeah, by the way, our whole band's moving in, so.
Yeah, and we'll keep it quiet after 8, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of, like, the band, in the Big Pink, you know? They all got together, and they're just writing and recording, and they had Dylan would come over and record. I mean, that's kind of a cool situation.
I think every band gets that Big Pink and where they want to do that dream like the band and Dylan did. That's the concept.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Grateful Dead or the Allman Brothers, how they all live together, you know?
So... It appears to me that when your group started out, when Steepwater started out, they were more blues-based than I think of, like the Allman Brothers or the Rolling Stones or Led Zeppelin, some of these groups that started as a blues-based kind of band and then evolved organically into a rock and roll band with their own particular sound. And I think that you guys, you know, followed that same format. Was that something that was premeditated or just kind of happened that way?
I think we just got more confident with writing songs. I mean, we love blues. I still love blues. I think we were all really getting into Muddy Waters and Elmore James, but we were white kids from the suburbs. So that's just, you know, when we tried to play those songs, they came out how they came out. And I think just as time went on, we got more confident to just keep playing our own music. And not question if something was, well, that's too country or that's too rock. People know us as a blues band. We can't do that.
It almost gave you more freedom, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the blues, it's still in there. I mean, I can probably tell you what songs are most removed from the blues and which are closest in our catalog, but none of it's really intentional. We just kind of write music.
Right.
But yeah, that was the idea because our favorite bands like the Black Crowes and Led Zeppelin and things like that were bands that started with the blues and then just kind of twisted around and wrote music around that.
Well, you guys seem to have your own unique sound, and it is a combination of like these things you mentioned, blues and country, rock and roll. So who does most of the writing?
Well, nowadays, almost everybody writes. Lyrically, I kind of handle all the lyrics, but the musically, especially on this last record, there's a couple pieces where Eric wrote all the music and I put the lyrics. There's a couple where Todd wrote all the music and I put the lyrics and the melody. There's some where I wrote the whole song. There's some where Joe had a groove. So it's hard to say because we all write. I mean, as probably as far as whole complete songs, I probably do a little more. But on this record, it's quite a mix. And we split all our writing credits because we don't nitpick about who wrote what.
That's broken up many good bands, right?
Yeah, and when you get into situations where you have a song placed in a commercial or a movie, it ends all arguments right there. We're a band, so we split it. You know?
So you guys have had some experience where some of your music has been in commercials and movies and television?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, some of it was seeked out by, you know, some managers we had with connections, and some of it's fallen in our lap.
Nice.
Like one example, like we had a song off called Baby, You're On Your Own that ended up in a movie called 5-Year Engagement, and it was somebody on the internet that was looking for a band from the Midwest and stumbled upon us somehow.
Wow.
And put us in that movie, and it that kind of stuff helps if you can get, you know, some money doing that. It's a different era we live in where you have to do stuff like that to survive financially as a band. And then there was other things like I think we had a song in Better Call Saul. There was a Nissan commercial and Friday Night Lights and things like that.
We talked a little bit about the recording process and the fact that you guys all do songwriting, collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
How does that start? I mean, is it the melody? Is it the poem? Is it the song? How does that work for you?
It's all different.
Yeah.
Yeah. We really don't have a technique. Sometimes I'll have, I guess, a poem, for lack of a better word, in a notebook, and I'll put music to it. Other times I'll have a whole piece of music and force myself to write a melody to it. Sometimes I'll have a whole song written and take that whole melody and swap it with another song.
Borrow from yourself.
Yeah. Or just switch them.
Yeah.
Titles and lyrics and flip flop them. So I don't really have a set way. I mean, a lot of them are written quickly. It seems like a lot of the good ones are written quickly.
Right.
But again, like that song I mentioned, Bring On the Love, that was a challenge because they, you know, Eric pretty much had the music done and was like, here you go. So that was more work, but I still think it came out good. So there's not really one set way. I've forced myself to write songs, and other ones have come naturally.
Sure. I mean, I've heard people talk about, you know, like you're an antenna, and just sometimes just the song shows up on your lap.
Yeah, yeah.
And then other songs you work on for 20 years, and you're still not happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, if I listen to it like 2 days later or a week later, and I still like it, those are usually ones I keep.
Okay.
And if I listen to it and I'm like, oh, this is crap, then
put it in the pile, right? Well, you know, I was looking at your catalog of recording, and it's almost like you guys have put out a record every year.
Almost, yeah, yeah.
So that's very ambitious, and you have that music in you.
Yeah.
You got to let it out. Can you talk about some of your other records that you're proud of?
Yeah, I mean, there's none that I really dislike. I mean, they all served a point in time. Some of the older ones, when Mike was in the band, we don't really play too much of that material anymore just because it was kind of a different feel when he was in the band.
Mm-hmm.
But we still draw heavily on, there was an album we did in 2005 called Revelation Sunday. And for whatever reason, that one gets a lot of Pandora play like that. So it's funny because we have new people coming out to see the band, and they're yelling out these songs that we wrote 11 years ago, and we're like, oh, well, I guess we could still play them.
That's great, though. I mean,
so, yeah. Yeah, it's not a bad problem to have. And then, I'm proud of that one and the one we did with Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've done three live albums total. We did one live at the Double Door in Chicago, which recently is closed or moving.
Sure.
So, and then we did one when Eric first joined the band called Live and Humble. And Live and Humble is one of my favorites because I like live recordings, and because Eric had just joined the band, there was that like intensity about it. It was something new.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's none that I put on and I hate. I mean, I think we get better as we go. But
sure, because I always look at a record as kind of a snapshot. That's what we sounded like at that point in time. Even a lot of those songs, like, you probably perform them better now because they've got, you know.
And some fall to the wayside, and then we bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's hard to listen to your own music, too, without being
sure.
Analytical. I'm always listening to, like, well, how did we get that snare tone on that record? And I'm thinking.
Yeah. That was so long ago. I don't remember. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. How many shows do you do a year?
If I had to average it out, I think it's about between 150 and 160, somewhere
right
on the average. Yeah, yeah.
And these days, I mean, the road isn't what it used to be, so you guys are still road dogs. And what do you have to say about the road?
I mean, we still enjoy doing it. I mean, that's the whole point when you get on stage. So no matter how tired you are, or if you had a crappy travel day, or you were bored all day, once you get on stage, that's the whole point. So if there's people coming to see you, and you're going to do it, and people are coming out, it's worth it. You know, the downtime can drive some people nuts. You know, but we also, I think we do it smart. Like this coming May, we're going overseas for 5 weeks, but until then, we're just doing weekends.
Give yourself a little break.
Yeah, there's been times in the past where we came home from Europe and then had 2 days off and went to out west for a month, and it was a little crazy. If you don't, I mean, you can do stuff like that once in a while, but you gotta maintain your sanity too.
I saw recently on social media you guys had some problems with your van.
Yeah, and we got a new one now.
Yeah,
so hopefully.
Excellent. And was that, did you do like a GoFundMe type of thing, crowdfunding?
We did a GoFundMe because we were in Florida and we had lost 3 gigs, plus the van repairs, plus a week of hotels that none of us were counting on. And you know, you don't want to abuse something like GoFundMe. You really want to use that when you really need it. And it showed how loyal some of our fan base is out there, and they really helped us out.
That's excellent.
And by doing that, we came out about even with the van repairs and what we would have made from the gigs and paying all the expenses to get back. But then, like, 2 weeks later, the van broke down again, and they were like, I mean, a van had 400,000 miles on it. So we're like, okay, it's all right. So now we got a new van.
Yeah. But that's great that your fans kicked in and helped out.
Yeah, it really, really, really helped out with that situation. And hopefully we can go down there and make those shows up. There was like 3 that were missed down in Florida, and sometimes, you know, it happens. So.
You mentioned coming back home from Europe. I know you guys have been going overseas for years. You're big in Spain. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing that happened. We had our records were released over there, and we got lucky in 2005. We got invited by a promoter to play at the Azquina Rock Festival, which is up in northern Spain. And it was a festival, you know, it was kind of similar to something like, maybe not quite as big, but Bonnaroo-ish here. Mm-hmm. So it was a big opportunity. So our first appearance over there, we got to play in front of a really nice crowd. So after that, we would go, because of that gig, things caught on, and we were able to go back and do clubs in Spain. And we've probably been there 10 or 11 times. And because of going to Spain, it took a few years, but now other promoters caught on, and now we can go to Germany and Switzerland and Ireland, and we've gotten more opportunities over there. But it was that initial gig in Spain that spawned being able to do that.
That's great.
And, yeah.
Can you tell me about how the international audiences are versus the domestic audiences?
It depends on what town you're in. It's like, you know, it's the same, but it's different. It's like you're in a foreign country, but once you get into a blues club or a rock club, it's like, well, this looks like something at home. You know? But like in Spain, there's areas, like there's an area in the Congas where the crowd they're nuts, like in a good way, but they're like crowd surfing and doing stuff. And that's not really what you would affiliate with our music. That's just what they do there.
Sure.
And then there's more, then there might be another town where they're more subdued and they're more watching and clapping politely. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced both, but it seems if I had to generalize, like Spain and Germany, they're pretty excited. And maybe like Poland, we played in Poland recently, they maybe a little more polite, but still into it, you know what I mean?
And so you've been going to Spain for quite some time, so you have a following there at this point, right?
Yeah. We can do a lot of shows there, everything from small clubs to bigger venues to festivals. And okay. Yeah, in fact, we're going there again to do a festival here in a few months.
Can we go way back to the beginning?
Yeah.
How did you start playing music?
Well, I started when I was about 14. I was always interested in music. My mom played piano, and I had older brothers and sisters that weren't necessarily musicians, but they were, you know, they were listening to, like, you know, their age group. They were listening to Aerosmith and Ted Nugent, and I was hearing things like that coming out of their bedroom.
Yeah, but that's blues-based stuff too, right?
Right, yeah. So it wasn't I was getting the blues just filtered through other music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was about 14, there was like a group, I had a whole group of friends. I think we all kind of bought guitars at the same time. And I had one friend who was like way beyond us that I would hang out. And I'd be like, I want to be able to play like him. He was playing like Van Halen and Eric Clapton. And so I was about 14 years old and I got an Arbor acoustic. And then I think I eventually got a Kramer Striker. And just, I got, like a lot of guitar players, I got pretty fanatical about it, you know. Everything else fell by the wayside and was playing 8 hours a
day. Sure, in the woodshed, yeah.
Yeah, and musically, I liked everything. I was listening to Doors and Zeppelin. I even played in some metal bands.
Wow.
I was just absorbing everything. And then as I got to be 17, 18, I started, again, I was lucky to have a lot of friends that were into music. Be like, you ever hear of Muddy Waters? And this is where Zeppelin got that song from. And this is where, you know, if you check out this Dylan record. So I was always going back, or do you ever hear of Robert Johnson? It just kept going back, and I realized where these bands were getting stuff. And still, I like a lot of kinds of music, which I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Like a lot of music.
Well, Louis Armstrong said there's two kinds of music, good music and bad music.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So I suppose.
We like good music.
Yeah.
And it's all really, it's all relative, I guess, or subjective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, you started to get more into the blues and slide guitar and that kind of, when did you pick up the slide?
The slide, I think a friend of mine had a really cheap, it wasn't, I don't remember what it was. It looked like a Supro, but something where you couldn't fret it, you know, and I think it might have been Johnny Winter or trying to learn a Led Zeppelin riff that I realized it was slide.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt, I didn't start playing a slide until I'd been playing guitar for 5 or 6 years. And the slide felt more natural to me in some ways. It felt easier than bending.
Okay.
So I don't know why. It didn't feel awkward to me. The slide felt really natural. So I just, and I think I even started, for you guitar players out there, started playing in standard tuning because I was just, it's just the same notes. You got to play over the fret instead of the space. So,
and now you're doing more open tunings.
I do both. But not because it's any easier. Just because that's the sound I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But standard and open tunings and. But yeah, I didn't attempt the slide till later when I started hearing it on songs I was trying to learn. You know.
And then you went from there and metal bands and at some point you met the guys and you formed Steepwater. How did that come about?
Well, I was in it was in my early 20s. I hooked up with a guy named, maybe you know, Daryl Coots.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Keyboard player. Great.
Yeah, he was putting a band together called, we call it the Big Skinny Blues Band. And long story short, me and Daryl and a couple other guys were playing, but Daryl had known Joe and Todd, so he asked, you know, our bass player had left, and he asked Todd to come in, and then, of course, Todd eventually brought Joe in, because they were rhythm sections, been playing together for many years in different bands, and then long story short, Daryl ended up going off and doing different things, kind of in the blues scene, and we stayed together and just started, change the name of the band, but I met all those guys through Daryl and playing in the blues band, yeah.
Okay. And how did the name come about for the band?
Me and my buddy Jason were driving on the Skyway there, and we'd been arguing about band names, not arguing, but discussing for about a month, and I was kind of over it because we couldn't come up with anything, and my buddy Jason looks over, and there was a barge that said Steepwater, and I still don't know to this day if the boat was called Steepwater or if it said Warning Steepwater, because Steepwater is that nasty water.
Sure.
I don't remember the circumstances, but he goes, how about the Steepwater band? And I go, okay, I don't know. And when I told Todd and Joe, they're like, that's great. That's perfect, because it's got a little twang to it. We got a little southern rock mixed with blues. They're like, that's great. And they loved it. And
rest is history.
Yeah. So that was the name.
So when you started playing guitar, what were your influences? Who were you listening to?
Well, Jimmy Page was my guy, like a lot of other kids around me. But mm-hmm. I was a big Led Zeppelin fanatic. I was trying to learn Led Zeppelin songs. And Robbie Krieger, I think, because I had an uncle that had given me a Doors album called Weird Scenes Inside the Gold Mine.
Sure.
And that, actually, I should have mentioned that. That's the first time I'd heard, really zone in on slide, was like Wild Child and Moonlight Drive. Uh-huh. But didn't try it till later.
Sure.
But I was listening to a lot of classic rock and stuff like Black Sabbath. And so, you know, like a lot of the English guitar player like Page. And then later on, I kind of had to, it was actually the night me and my girlfriend met. I opened for Robbie Krieger at Double Door.
Oh, wow.
And I don't ever ask for autographs.
Sure.
And I had him sign that record and told him he's one of the first slide players I liked. And he was super cool.
That's actually.
He's like, yeah, I heard I like the Robert Johnson songs you were doing, and we talked for a minute. I'm glad you asked me that, because that was actually the first slide player I got into. Yeah, it was Robbie.
That's cool to meet one of your heroes, but then to actually perform with him.
Yeah, you know? And he was super cool. And I'm not usually big on the got to get this guy's audit, but it just seemed
right. It was meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was totally cool about it, and he played great that night too. Yeah. So he can still play. Yeah.
And you mentioned Black Sabbath. I think I saw recently where you did a video
for
Orange Amplifiers. Can you talk about that?
Well, it was for Vintage Guitar Magazine.
Vintage Guitar Magazine.
Yeah, okay. They had written about the band a few times, and the girl at their magazine who's in charge of these videos on Facebook, they do these birthday shout-outs, and I had done a Paul Kossoff one from Free. Mm-hmm. And this is a fun thing to do. It's cool. And I talked to her and I said, well, do you have any more? And she sent me this list. She's like, well, these are birthdays coming up. And I'm like, Tony Iommi, that'd be cool. And I have that Orange amp. I'm like, I could totally get the Tony sound and do this. So that's how that came about. That's just for fun. I like doing that.
Just sort of something out of your regular wheelhouse, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Your fans would be surprised to hear you play some Black Sabbath.
Yeah, or? And to me, it's not that far out in left field because I think the blues is in them too, somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just a little darker and heavier. But right. All those guys started out listening to blues, Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler, and playing blues riffs, I'm sure, you know.
That's for sure.
It all ties in somehow.
It does. What did Muddy Waters say? Blues had a baby named Rock and Roll.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I mean, I tell people all the time, oh, Jimi Hendrix, he's a blues player.
Mm-hmm.
Led Zeppelin has a blues band. And they're like, no, that's rock. And I'm like, well, listen closely.
It's in there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I know both you and I have the fortunate opportunity to perform solo shows at the Harlem Avenue Lounge.
Yes, yeah.
And I know we don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
So can you talk about playing solo shows and how you like that experience versus playing with the band?
Well, I love it because I think it's you're naked up there, you know, and you learn a lot just being up there as a solo artist because you can't really hide anything.
Right.
And I like the challenge of it, and I like the freedom of being able to do whatever I feel like at any time, and you don't have to worry about a band, you know, following. But, of course, I love playing with a band just as much.
Sure.
But I always feel like after I do one of those shows, when you go back to the band, you're like, there's something easier about
playing. You're stronger for it.
Yeah, 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 and you've got these other guys but with you now, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I love it, yeah. And I might, it's an opportunity to do some tunes maybe that wouldn't work with a band.
Or try some new material.
Or try new songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, give them a test run. But I think it just makes you a better musician. I try to do those whenever possible. I love it. Plus, I like playing acoustic guitar too. So,
what kind of guitarist do you like to play?
What kind of acoustic?
Yeah, yeah. Just electric guitars, acoustic guitars.
My acoustic guitar, I mean, there's a lot I'd like to own.
Yeah.
But the one I gig with is it's a Martin D18. They call it a Golden Era.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very old one. I think it was made in 2005. As far as electric guitars, that's problematic for me because I like everything.
Right.
But no, if I had to pick one, I'm a Les Paul guy these days, and I have three Les Pauls that I usually bring out, but a lot of the slide stuff I like to play in SG, and then I have a Strat and I have a Firebird, but I really like a lot. I think different guitars serve their purpose for different sounds, and I don't really get, I have my favorite, but I don't get attached to one guitar. I get in these different moods where I want to
sure.
play a different one.
And amplifiers, I remember seeing you one time with an old Bassman, which I have one of those piggyback
mm-hmm.
Bassmans, and to me that's like a secret weapon. It's just great tone in that. But I've also seen you with other amplifiers. What other kind of amps do you like to work with?
Yeah, I still have those Bassmans.
Yeah.
With Steepwater last few years, I've actually been using Orange amps, and that probably goes back to a lot of my heroes in the 70s played Orange amps.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an old hand-wired one, and I have some of the newer ones. And they're more versatile than people think. They're simple is what I like about them. Would think a lot of guitar players just think of them as big gain monsters, but if you set them right, they can really be a great blues sound too. And the thing I like about playing an Orange amp with a Les Paul is Eric plays a super reverb. So when he plays a Les Paul and I'm playing, our Les Pauls don't sound the same. They don't get lost.
Right.
Because I'm
right.
playing the Orange amp, which is more like a similar to a Vox tone at times, that English kind of. And I think they complement each other really well. So that's why I've been playing the Oranges lately live. But just like guitars, there's a lot of amps I love too.
I'm sure
you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look around. I got a variety of.
In a studio, I'll use all kinds of different amps if they're available. But live, I like the Orange. Yeah.
And in the studio, so do you have a certain approach? Like on this song, I want this guitar and this amp.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, that's half the fun for me. Yeah.
Right.
yeah, let's try a basement on this with a telly, or an orange with a paw on this. And yeah, that's all the fun. I love that. Yeah.
Can you talk about your singing? You're the lead vocalist in the band.
Yeah.
Your approach to singing, or your thoughts about that?
I think it took me a while to become a singer. I still don't, like, if you took the guitar away and just sang, I don't think I'd feel pretty naked.
Right.
So I just consider myself a guitar player who has to sing, but I like it now. At first, I don't know if I was too, you know, the confidence has to come.
Sure.
But now I enjoy it, and I just try to work within my limits, but push the limits too. You know, I know I'm not going to be able to sing like, I don't know what's an example.
Robert Plant.
Yeah, I can't sing like Robert Plant, right. but I like Bob Dylan's voice. He can't sing like Robert Plant either. But I think it's just, I think just if you put your personality into it, and I try my best to be on key.
That's all we can ask, right?
Yeah, and try to come up with melodies that I think are interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But
Do you find any particular inspiration in melodies, or do they just come to you, or do you search them out, or do the lyrics sometimes dictate a melody?
Yeah, I think sometimes the lyrics and the melody come together, and I don't know how. But it's weird, as a guitar player, people always just, when I'm listening to a song, I always hear the vocal melody first.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my brain tunes into. I don't know why. And words. So I think it's important, you know, because all my favorite guitar players that I remember had good songs. Like Jimi Hendrix wasn't just a great guitar player.
Right.
He's a
great songwriter.
Or
he would do a Dylan song or something, you know.
And I bet if his songs weren't that strong, he wouldn't be remembered like he was before, you know. I don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah. But he wasn't a one-trick pony.
You know? No, no, no.
Yeah.
Same with Jimmy Page. He didn't sing, but he was
virtuoso.
He wrote all those interesting
and produced some
guitar
great
parts.
Stuff too.
Yeah. And then millions of lesser known. There's a lot of great songwriters and guitar players out there.
Oh, I had read somewhere where there's a Steepwater tribute band. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's
you've made it, right?
Yeah. In Japan, of all places,
really?
Which is odd because we've never been to Japan. But yeah, there's a guitar player in Japan that obviously was a fan of the band and put a band together. And you can find them on YouTube. They wrote me on Facebook, and they're like, would you mind if we made a Steepwater tribute band? I go, no, I think it's cool. And I'm like, would you name it? And I named them the Takers because we have a song called Remember the Taker. Uh-huh. And you're taking our music, so.
Sure, perfect, yeah.
And next thing you know, I started seeing these videos where he's got the, almost like my rig. I think he has the orange amp and Les Paul, and that they're playing Armored. They play songs that we don't even play anymore. So they get pretty deep. And I'm curious if these people going to see him just like their band, or these people do they know who we are? I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to see a Steepwater tribute band. I think that they're just going because they like the music.
Like the,
I don't know. But.
Wow, but that's the ultimate compliment, really.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's strange, but in a good way.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I was like, well, you got to be kidding me.
You should work on a tour of Japan, right?
And we could compare sets, so make sure we don't play together and make sure they don't play the same set.
Yeah, who's the real Steepwater here, right? Yeah,
yeah. Wow. So, and the guy even, he's tracked down some guitars that I've sold and bought them.
Wow.
And I'll see him having the, I'm like, that's my old guy.
Yeah.
And Todd's bass, so yeah. Yeah, pretty cool, though, yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
I know sometimes you work with some other musicians, mm-hmm. for instance, Kenny Kinsey and the Mojo Daddies. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, me and Kenny Kinsey and Nick Bird and Jerry Porter, and we've been doing that for a long time now. I don't even know. I want to say over 10 years, maybe. I don't. But originally, that kind of started at Leroy's, doing a blues jam. And, you know, all those guys are in other bands. Sometimes, you know, Corey Dennison used to play with us. There's another guitar player named Ryan Fromm that'll do it if I'm not around.
Right.
But it's kind of the core band was me, Nick, Jerry, and Ken. And the idea was just to do some gigs around Chicago and Indiana. And have fun with it, and we kept it together, and we're still doing it. We'll play at Buddy Guy's, and we'll play at, you know, Leroy's, and And whenever everybody has time, we still try to do Mojo Daddy gigs. And those guys are fantastic musicians.
It's like a super group, really.
Yeah, we have a great time doing it. We did one CD a few years back. I mean, maybe we'll do it again in the future. But, you know, it's not so much a band that gets together and rehearses. We just kind of show up to the gig and go for it. And I love it. Yeah.
Sure. And this, again, the spontaneity. I mean, you get a group of musicians like that together, and you just count off songs and call out a key, and you don't know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. And one thing we've never really done in that band is original music, which I think would be interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that sometime. But because we do like Muddy Waters, and we do Sly Stone and some Rolling Stones, and but it's a blast.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Nick Bird. I mean, what a great guitar player. He seems to approach the instrument differently than most guitar players.
Yeah, he does stuff where I have no idea what he's doing that I couldn't do.
But I mean, I hear him playing, it's like that's the organ part
or something. Yeah.
He's not even playing it like a guitar.
Yeah, he's a monster player. Yeah.
So that's got to be fun too.
Yeah, you know? We feed off each other pretty well because I don't think our styles are alike, but it works together.
Yeah.
You know?
When I was looking at, you know, all the records you guys have done and all the tours that you guys have done, I would say that you guys are successful. And some people equate success with whether you're on television or you're on radio, although you guys are on television. I know on radio. But, I mean, looking forward, you know, what's in it for the Steep Water Band, you know, in the next 5 years? What do you hope to do?
I think we're just going to keep making records and doing what we do. And we have enough good things happen to us that nobody wants to quit. And the older we get, it seems like the more we enjoy doing it. And as long as people are coming out to the shows, I mean, if the audience gets bigger, that's fantastic. That's great. And I think it is even, because I'm still seeing new people come out.
Great.
But we're just going to continue to do what we've always done. Let's put a record out and tour. I mean, yeah, being able to go to Europe and play all these countries and do tours like that, you're right. I consider that success. Being able to do something you love is success.
Yeah.
I mean, you could... Of course, there's bands that are way bigger and play stadiums and that. And that, I mean, it just depends what you consider success. I consider being able to do that is success for sure. But we don't want to lay back and just be like, well, that's cool.
Yeah,
we like to keep working.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with all the records you've made, I mean, it doesn't seem like you're slowing down.
No, I always want to see what the next one, what we're going to come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only problem is, but then we argue more about set lists the more records come.
It's hard. Yeah. Yeah. No.
You got to play that one. Well, that one.
People love that one. I'm tired of that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a good problem.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say we make some music?
Sounds good. The key to the highway, I'm built out and bound to go. I gotta leave heaven, walking at miles too slow. I'm going back, went back to the bottom, where I'm better known. You haven't done nothing. Drive a good man away from home.
Well, give me one kiss. One kiss, mama. Just before I go. When I leave this old town, sure ain't gonna come back no more. I got a key to the highway. I'm built out and bound to go. I gotta leave here running. Sure ain't gonna come back no more.